Welcome to UberCube, the podcast where we discuss all things cube, but with refreshments. This is your host, Anthony Adams, a.k.a. UberBear, and I'm joined by my other host,
Stu,
and our other host,
Hi, it's me, May.
And today, we have, and today,
it's a Mario.
And today we have a special guest on here. It was on a previous show. We talked about our two-headed giant. And yeah, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's Chill. Go by Jonathan or Chill, one of the two.
Yeah.
So Chill has a pretty wonderful YouTube channel, ChillMTG. If you're into some pretty sensational drafting, moto drafting, vintage cube, all that kind of stuff, check it out. It's a must watch, in my opinion.
So controversial game winning tips.
or game winning, game losing punts.
The punt meter is definitely a big favorite for me.
The punt meter is the reason why I even walked up and talked to you for the first time. I'm like, yeah, I like this guy. He's willing to say it.
Well, today we are covering a absolutely fascinating cube. Jonathan, would you like to just go ahead and give us a little bit of a rundown on your cube?
Elevator pitch, come on.
Elevator pitch, I know. I feel like I'm being put to the test here. It's like I got to have my cube overview, with all the appropriate points that you guys have talked about before. Now we've got the elevator pitch.
Yeah, we're just looking for the gist right now because we have yet to do the thing that we always
do. Let's do that real quick. Let's do that real quick before we get into the deep and dark and dirty of it, right? I'll go quick. I got me a New Belgium Voodoo IPA. Anthony, what you drinking?
I am currently having a Sam Adams Porch Rocker. It's a Lemon Rattler.
Sounds good. May, what you got?
I am actually being the designated driver host, and I'm actually only drinking water because I've been dehydrated a lot recently.
Gotta hydrate.
So I'm going to be the responsible member this time.
Good for you.
And I am drinking a vanilla creme brulee pour-over coffee decaf because I'm old.
I bet it's delicious.
All right, now that we have done the thing that we always do, and I abruptly interrupted, Chill, carry on with your overview of this amazing cube. Tell the audience what we're talking about, and here you go.
Yeah, well, so if this is just the elevator pitch, right? So the cube we're talking about is Dragons of Winter's Night.
Cool name.
Yes, I do forget where the apostrophe goes in that half the time. But Dragons of Winter's Night, it's a lower-powered synergy-type cube. It's a desert-themed cube, so desert being where you have to draft all of your lands, which I thought was pretty cool. And instead of having deserts, which has been done before, I wanted to jump to the snow archetype area. So it's a desert-themed snow cube and with dragons, so that's the elevator pitch.
Yeah, man, it's pretty crazy. We've been giving it some test drafts here in the group to familiarize yourself with it. I have to say, I was nervous about the Desert Cube when we went to KubeCon because I didn't think I would be able to actually draft it. And I actually regret that decision. And I will if it comes back. Because after drafting yours, I realize I've been building some pretty dope decks, man. I've been pleased with the outcomes. Stu, you've been giving it a few whirls here too.
I have. And I will say that the opportunity, and typically you have the opportunity to kind of cut the primo lands if you're drafting, you know, like a vintage cube, for example, right? You'll go, and at least I do, I go heavy on the fetches, heavy on the OG door lands, that kind of stuff. But it really is critical to keep those land choices in mind throughout the draft. And I was taking those lands, those especially the fetchable dual lands, snow lands, they enter the battlefield tapped, but they're fetchable and they're super powerful. And it like obviously in this cube, I love the snow theme as well. Like that's super awesome as well. Tell us a little bit about the snow theme and what sort of drove you in that direction.
Yeah. So we got to hang out at KubeCon 2022, and I'm looking forward to hanging out again here at KubeCon 2023. While we were there, while I was playing your artifact cube there, Anthony,
yeah,
the table behind us was Austin's Amonkhar Desert Cube. So Goblin Gathering on Twitter, he was doing some judge work while we were there. Super nice fellow. But I was like, what is this Amonkhar cube that everyone's literally was raving about? People were having a lot of fun playing it. That was a desert themed cube, right? So his cube, his take on a desert theme, literal desert theme, kind of in the Amonkhet block from the name. And that's kind of how I was introduced to it. I did not get to play it. Did any of you get to play Austin's Cube while we were there?
I think I got to play it once. Yeah, May wasn't there, but I think I got to play it once.
I did not. It frightened me. It literally, it was so far outside of my comfort zone just from drafting. I guess that's where I get the word regret from, right? Because I've been drafting yours, and as a side topic that we'll talk about on a future episode, I used your proportions and ratios that you, I guess, in so many words, copied the idea of his, and I used it to design my Monopoly cube, which I have yet to play, but I have watched others draft it, and it sharply made me realize that the land base can be incorporated within the environment. And I have had people ask me, and it's, could you please expound upon what the concept of a desert cube is? Because I've had that question come up. Chill.
Yeah, so desert themed cube. So normal draft, right? You draft your, you know, 3x15s, 3x16 packs, whatever it is, get your 45 picks. And then very casually, because everyone's friendly, we just wander over to the land station after the draft. And it's like, hey, what do I need? What do I need for my five color good stuff deck? I need like all these basics and stuff. And that's pretty common. It's pretty common. It's how most everything's drafted. Like if you're familiar with like the MTGO Vintage Cube, right? Like you just add your lands and you're done. Same thing for like just your limited game nights at your LGS or sealed or whatever, you just add your lands. So it's very common, you know, way to do it. So nobody really thinks about drafted lands unless they're, like you said, they're drafted that Remo fixing. Desert Cube turns that on its head. It says, no, there is no land station. There are no freebies. If it's a Monopoly Cube, do not pass go. You have to draft every land you are going to put in your deck. And so what that's going to do is it's going to add a lot of tension to the draft. Tension in a good way, hopefully, right? And hopefully folks get usable decks, like they don't just train wreck the whole draft. kind of mentioning, Anthony, when you said you're like a little out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
But I think as cube curators, you can do a lot to make sure that that doesn't happen to people. But yeah, so Desert Cube, short of it is, you have to draft every land. There is no land station after the end of the draft.
So the ratios, and I'm jumping a little ahead, because I never built one before, and I kind of did the monkey see, monkey do design concept, right? I looked at yours, and you're at an odd number. What is it, 400 and something goofy?
432.
Yeah, weird. And I went ahead and did – well, mine's equally as weird too, because I'm like, I'm going to build a 180. And then the minute I realized that I'm putting land proportions into my actual playables, it started becoming, well, I need 210 to make it functional. I was using basically a scalable ratio looking at yours. I would say average 35% to 38% of actual your mana needs to be incorporated inside of your, I guess, in the cube, right? That's the ratios I came up with. I didn't run the math on yours, but
I was actually going to ask that question. Like, obviously you've got fetch lands in
there.
Well,
actually, I did run it. It's 38.5%.
Well, yeah, literally got the percentage right there.
Right in front of my face.
Was there I'm going to put in the fixing that I want that would be sort of outside of a normal, like land box, as you mentioned. So the fetch lands and the fetchable dual lands, all the, you know, the non-basic snow lands. And then was it a consideration afterwards that you just decided this is the number of each color of land that I want? And that's kind of how you ended up on that 432 number.
So I try not to reinvent the wheel, right? So I started with that 432 number. I just copied Austin's cube.
Okay.
I was fixing cameras.
I was just assuming May was just high-fiving the hell out of us. High five!
High five!
But May's got questions too. May, have we moved along in an advanced level, or do you want to time yours in a certain way?
I actually had a few notes that I wanted to add in.
Dig in.
Specifically regarding the overview, which I find really amazingly well done. I love the way that it's presented. Like, having that nice little image to just be that headliner for the Dragons of Winter's Night, just beautiful. It is very beautiful for an overview, and I think that anybody listening to this should actually just go and take a look at it, because it's one of the best overviews that I've seen on Cube Cobra. It's short, it's sweet, it's eye-catching, and that's the kind of things that we should be seeing as cube curators.
Yeah, though, thank you. So there's a couple of things that allowed this to happen, right? And I am not an idea person. I just copy things that work for other people. So I noticed in Austin, right? So the Amankar Desert Cube, he had this picture up, and I'm like, how did he get this picture? I thought I could only, you know, put in pictures of cards because that's what's so very common. So I looked at how he had built his page, and then I did some Google searching because it's just kind of your standard markdown, and it's like, oh, you can actually link pictures to this. So Gwen has incorporated here into Cube Cobra is really great. Some of the markdown guide that he has and then you know, just Googling has allowed, you know, it's really cool to be able to put a catchy picture in there. And then, you know, in terms of this cube's inspiration, you know, we probably get to that, but like, yeah, a lot of work went into that. If you do YouTube stuff and you get good at thumbnails, then you get good at image manipulation. So I was very pleased with, you know, the way the background looked, you know, and how the Lance, an homage to Dragon's Lance, goes through the lettering, and you got the kind of, you know, ornate lettering there behind the D. So
plus, as the flavor aficionado, I am very pleased with how you describe how it puts you in the drafter seat, and you're explaining the glacial plane, and you're creating like the sense of your own plane, and I love that.
Oh, flavor-wise, yeah,
it feels like you're putting a lot into it.
Yeah,
I was humming the theme for Game of Thrones every time I draft it, until the point where you go, you know what? Hey, Alexa, play that. I don't know why I was even making myself do it. So I'm like, I'm just going to draft. It's amazing.
Yeah, flavor, right? The Game of Thrones. So Cube Draft, right? Steven, you had him on for your Lords of Metal episode. He's the one who's like, yeah, it's very A Song of Ice and Fire. And I was like, yes, that's exactly it.
100%. Yeah.
That's what you're picking out. So. No, the overview, you know, it's one of those things, you know, I think there's some really great overviews out there. People put a lot of passion into that. Personally, I like trying to have something be just a little short, a little sweet, get right to the point. Yeah. And so, May, your compliments there. I really appreciate that. The other big thing, I think, just at the front of a overview that I like is just kind of like, what is your vision for this cube? Like, what is your intent as a cube curator? And it's not... I mean, yeah, it's good to communicate that with folks that are going to draft it or play it or look at it. But honestly, I think putting the vision right there on your front page helps, you know, me personally, helps me as a cube curator, like refocusing, like, what am I trying to do with this cube? What is my intent? And then, so I like having that on the front page. But no, I appreciate that compliment. So yeah. So now I don't put cards in, right? Now any chance I get, it's like, let me put a picture in here instead of a card. So. But Anthony Maddox does that as well. If you look at his battle box overview, he's got a great, great layout of his battle box cards. And so, you know, that was why I wanted to fan the dragons out the way that I did. And so, yeah, no, it's pretty cool. So a lot of great tools from the community here, you know, on Scryfall, right? All built on Scryfall is the base, but a lot of great tools by the community with Gwen and then stealing inspiration from other cube creators such as yourself and, you know, the Lucky Paper crew, and then you hear Anthony and Stu for how we want to move things, how we'd like to show our, you know, passion projects.
Yeah, absolutely. You basically put a bow on it by making it so beautiful, a book cover, right? And looking at this cube, and I highly recommend everybody stop what you're doing when you're listening to this, turn this podcast off, log into Cube Cobra.
Let's not get carried away. Yeah. Listen to the episode.
And check out this cube.
Then go take a look.
Hum, Sword of Fire and Ice. Yes, but... The environment, it's created this frozen wasteland with magic cards. It's created tension. Even the very choice volume of dragons, they're not rampant, right? I noticed there are a lot of them are elder dragons, or
they
they're the
feel special.
Yeah, they're not just they're not dragons doing cameos, right? they're actually the holdouts, the most powerful of the dragons. So I imagine it's just something about this environment you made has just really spoke to me as a thematic designer, right? I think May felt the same way as.
Oh, I definitely did. It actually gave me a lot of inspiration, and I was totally sidetracked earlier today, and I was reworking on a cube that I've been on and off working on called Dragon Time. And it's like this cube that I keep making versions for and then immediately taking it apart and then remaking it, just because making a cube specifically for dragons is hard. But the way that you had it was really inspirational, because, like you said, having it so that way all those dragons feel special and have them be the highlights of the cube rather than just being the full saturation of the cube. And I think that it adds a lot of flavor and depth that was... really desperately needed.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't start that way, right? Everything's iteration. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I think I had some more dragons in at the beginning until I finally settled on what I have. And I actually just got some feedback from some drafters, and they're like, hey, you know, your cube's called Dragon. It's the Dragon Cube. I think there should be some more dragons. So I did add a few more dragons in. But I feel, you know, with thematic cubes, and I think y'all have touched on this before, with thematic cubes, I think it's very important to you kind of pull that drafter in, right? Like right from the beginning, like as soon as they crack that first pack, which, you know, we all love that feeling, you know, sitting around the table, let me crack the first pack. As soon as they crack that first pack, like I'm hoping, right, with this cube or any thematic cube, whether it's, you know, the Monopoly cube you're building or the Fey cube, May, that, like, your drafters just pulled into that world that you're trying to build from. Like, oh, okay, this is cool. Like, what do I want to draft? What do I want to take? Like, what is this? Like, oh, this is sweet. I haven't seen a cube like this. I want to draft. Oh, I want to build, you know, I want to build this sweet, you know, icy dragon deck, or I want to build this artifact deck, or something to pull the drafter in. And that starts right from as soon as they crack that first pack. So
that's how we can piggyback off of that and ask, what's everybody's favorite dragon from this cube then?
Oh, mine's Old Gnawbone. I mean, because it's terrible everywhere else except for... It found its home, finally. Please see the Old Gnawbone method. That's a plug. That's the reason why I did that. That was very intentional. check out our previous podcast. Yeah, I love Old Gnawbone anyways. It is a great card. Yeah. How about you, Stu?
I kind of want to go with, because there's none of the super duper, like, super powerful, like the Glorybringers or any of that kind of stuff in there, right? So, I'm going to stick with red, and I'm going to go with Ancient Copper Dragon, 6/5 flyer for 6. And when it deals combat damage to a player, you roll a d20 and create a number of treasure tokens equal to the result. Strong, and you get treasure tokens.
Not good enough for Monopoly, though. It seemed like it would be the type of dragon you would invite over for Milton Bradley night.
Look at the art, though, as well.
It is disgusting.
It is, but that this is from a flavor perspective as well for me. I think the art on Ancient Copper Dragon is like so like fundamental dragon. I just love it.
Yeah. So for the listeners, so basically, I'm running about 15 dragons right now. I'm going to bring it up to you. Probably 20, potentially 19. There's not a good green dragon I can find that I want to add in. But I'm running so in terms of cycles, which we all love cycles, but I'm also a huge fan of, you know, let's break cycles. You don't need to run all 10 swords just because there's all 10 swords, right? So
yeah,
there are no swords in this cube. So I'm running the mythic cycle from AFR, and then I'm running the mythic cycle from Battle for Baldur's Gate. So those are kind of cool. You know, I have the full art versions of those because I wanted the dragons to feel
which
special.
Which are beautiful. Yes. I'm a big fan of those.
Very beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was a, you know, as a make them pop, right? Make them pop. And then I'm running almost the full cycle here of the Fate Reforged dragons, but I didn't include the Fate Reforged Silumgar because I don't like Hexproof as a mechanic, and I didn't want
to. Chill, which one's your favorite?
Yeah, so I don't know if I have a favorite. I can say from the last draft, the player next to me connected with the Ancient Silver Dragon, which is the 6 blue 8/8 flyer.
I love that one.
When it connects, you roll a d20 and draw that many cards, and he naturaled a 20. And so,
oh my goodness.
I'm kind of hoping he only has 19 cards in his library at that
four
point.
Cards. Yeah, he had 4 cards left in his library and managed to get the win still. So, yeah, I was like, you better. You have the whole deck in your hand.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I'll go with Ancient Silver Dragon just for the gameplay there because everyone loves drawing cards.
But yeah. And what does that card do for the audience?
Yeah, no, Ancient Silver Dragon, 6 blue. It's an 8/8 flying dragon, elder dragon. When you connect with it, you roll a d20, and then you draw cards equal to that dice roll. So yeah, natural to 20, and you have no maximum hand size, so you didn't have to discard. It's kind of flavor text, I guess. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
And May, you're not allowed to say Shivan Dragon. Just go ahead and get that up there.
Shivan Dragon is not even my favorite dragon anyway. But I actually have a curveball. I'm not going to pick my favorite dragon of all the dragons in here. I'm going to pick my favorite dragon in the context of this environment.
Yes.
Icing Death's Frost Tyrant is actually my favorite in this environment.
What
There's
does that
a
do? There's
reasons why it's my favorite in this specific environment. It is a Flying Vigilance 4/3 for 2 white, and it, when it dies, I create Icing Death Frost Tongue, a legendary white equipment that gets +2/+0, and whenever the equipped creature attacks, tap a target creature defending player controls, and then equip for 2. It's super aggressive, being able to tap things down, always having the value whether or not it dies or not, and it's a 4/3 Flying Vigilance for 4. That is a huge swing in power for how in demand those lands are. It makes it so that way I can see that in a draft and be like, oh, okay, I can actually prioritize all the cheaper things, have Icing Death as my top end, and then use that equipment to kind of bump up my stuff to put that pressure on. That's why it's my favorite for the context of this environment.
I love that choice, and I actually agree that the tapping down of opponents' creatures, it just almost seems to be a bit of an afterthought or not a commonly supported mechanic, but it is super duper powerful. And I know with like sets where that has been a major part of the mechanics that have been involved in that, you pick up those cards and you're just, I'm going to swing. I'm going to tap your creatures. I'm going to swing again. I'm going to keep tapping your creatures. And eventually you're at the point like, well, I'm just taking so much damage because they keep tapping my creatures now and I can't do anything about it.
It's so great in here because there's even the perfect partner equipment to go with it called Greatsword of Tyr, which is one in a white artifact equipment. Whenever the creature attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it and tap up to one target creature that player controls, equipped for one white. If you have both of those, you're tapping down two things every time you attack and your things get bigger.
Feels good.
It's like fair, feel a game.
Fair opposition, right? Opposition you had to work for.
It is fair opposition, and I love that.
That you can kill with a lightning bolt, right? If Lightning Bolt was in here. Yeah.
No, I almost want to say that I'm a little disappointed that Plate Armor's not in here, where it's just kind of,
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like an equipment that costs less to equip for every equipment that you have, and then just kind of really lean into that theme, but I think that could be a really good fit here.
I think you're right. I think that's what the maybe board was built for. Yeah, no, that was... Those are great choices. What I really love, there's some real flavor wins. One of the best flavor wins, in my opinion, is a Visions card that I have added in here in white. It's Retribution of the Meek. It's a sorcery for 2 and a white, and it's just reads, Bury all creatures with power 4 or greater. Now, the Bury really doesn't matter too much. I don't think I think that's a regeneration way it interacts with, but what I love about it is it just shows a dragon just getting destroyed in the background of the old Vision style art.
Which is perfect.
Super flavorful.
I think it's Nene, right? No, it's Natalie Hertz. So finding little gems like that, I don't know. Does anyone else get lost like scrolling through the scribe files?
Yes. Yes.
All the time.
Monopoly Cube. I needed a dog. I needed a plow. I need a battleship. Yes. You see where this goes, right? I mean, I get an iron. I mean, it just goes out of control. So what do your colors represent in your environment? Do you have what kind of drafter expect the individual colors to signify?
Yeah, that's a great question, Anthony. Thanks for asking that. So, you know, one of my biggest fears as a cube curator that people go on rails when they draft a cube, especially a new cube, or even I won't call them the trope archetypes, but everyone knows kind of like what are the most common, I guess, archetypes that a specific color has.
Azorius, Aristocrats, right. Rakdos,
or even just like monocolor, right? Like I'm aggro if I'm red, or I'm reanimator if I'm black, or like, you know, I'm ramp if I'm green, that kind of stuff. And so I wanted to definitely not tie any drafters into a very linear archetype. And so, you know, I felt it was important if you're kind of for the overall theme for the cube, right? You're stranded on this plane, you're gonna have to fight for survival, like you're gonna try to like grab onto anything that you can to like build your resources, build your deck, right? To include lands, which you need to draft to get a, you know, hopefully a 3-0 winning deck. You know, I survived. I beat the Dragons of Winter's Night at the end. Uh-huh. So one way I wanted to do that was to really make it so that drafters could almost go not any direction, but like a lot of different directions, even if they're in the same color, right? So on the cube overview, I just tried to put some short, hey, here are some things that these colors could do. So real quick in Wuburg order, right? So white supports recursion, artifacts, and equipment. And yes, artifacts and equipment are kind of different, even though they're, I understand, equipment's an artifact, right? So recursion, bringing stuff back, Lurrus type style effects, or Second Sunrise style effects. Artifacts, like you mentioned, May, the great sort of Tur. I'm sorry, that's an equipment. Artifacts, like Dispeller's Capsule or something that I can really, you know, build stuff up with, or equipment. So the sub was white, blue. I liked leaning into tapping things down. I thought that really fit into the ice, the snow. Like I can't untap. So tapping things down, but definitely not with opposition because that's not fun. Artifacts and snow. With black, I support faction, which is the zombie faction. But that's mostly in a sacrifice type way. But there is some zombie lords there.
They're White Walkers, right? White Walkers, is that what you're doing?
Right, exactly. And that's nice. What I didn't even make that connection when I started including it, right? And then it came forward and it's like, oh my gosh, White Walkers.
Your inspiration was you were just scrolling through HBO watching Game of Thrones and you had an idea, right? And you decided, I'm going to make a cube and it has nothing to do with Game of Thrones. And go
ahead. Right. Yeah. So Black, yeah, faction, zombie support, sacrificing. Yeah, there is graveyard a little bit in there, but mostly, again. So you can red, artifacts, equipment, and sacrifice, and then green, enchantments, snow and ramp. I did lean into enchantments a little bit there. And what I tried to do, whether or not I'm successful at this or not, that'll be up to the drafters to decide, is how well can going in a certain color and then reach out to another color, right? So could I start drafting artifacts in white and then find cards like enchantment, enchantress style cards in green that can help support that? Maybe I can, right? And then just really trying to work so that way drafters could reach into multiple colors and kind of find synergistic interactions to build their deck.
So as we progress through this, I've got little plants, little seeds that I want to put out there, like an idea as we go through. So I imagine May's also going to want to do that as well, like flavor ideas. So I have one before we start introducing the dragons.
I'm all ears.
Is Blizzard in the cube?
So I did. I think it. Yeah. So Hurricane is in the
cube. But is Blizzard in the cube? So I'm going to tell you what Blizzard does. So yeah, Blizzard. Yeah, Blizzard for two forest to get an enchantment.
Cumulative upkeep.
Yes. Get out of here. You literally said you have an enchantress theme. Cumulative upkeep, two. You cannot cast Blizzard if you control no snow-covered lands. Creatures with flying do not untap during their controller's untap phase. Blizzard.
Yeah, no, so it's perfect on theme, right? You're like, just include it. So,
yes.
Why don't you want anyone to have fun, Anthony?
I just want the dragons to have fun. This is where the dragons come out. Like, everything else is like, whatevs. It's a blizzard.
No fun.
No, creatures with flying do not untap. So.
Oh, yeah. So let's don't run Blizzard. This is a terrible magic card. Who suggested this?
So, that's a great point, right? Because, you know, you're scrolling on Scryfall, you're like, ooh, what's this card? It's like the artist snow, you know, because you can do the O tag, you're like the Oracle search decks for things with like, I'm sorry, you can do the art search for things with like snow and ice, and I've done that a million times. But I see a card like this. Now, I am removing, I do have a cumulative upkeep card in the cube right now. I think it's Cover of Winter, which is going to be coming out. I had a couple more. I think that's a great card, a great suggestion. That kind of ties green to blue, right? Because the whole tap thing is in blue. And so, yeah, it's an enchantment. It plays off Enchantress. Goes to blue, tying in the tap because there's some synergies with topping things down. For me personally, I'm going to be taking out all the cumulative upkeep. So you know, being that it's a dragons-themed cube, there's a lot of cons of Tarkir, that fit in really well. But there's mechanics and cons that I don't really want to support. So I'm not a personal fan of Morph or Megamorph. First, one of the reasons is if someone's drafting this cube for the first time and someone plays a Morph card, that person could be at a real disadvantage. Like if you're playing against someone who does know what's in the cube, they can maybe narrow down what that hidden information of Morph is. Whereas if someone's just sitting down to draft, they have no idea, right? You shouldn't really get extra points, I don't think. If you've like studied the cube, but I don't find that fun. So I don't want to include Morph. I don't want to include Megamorph. I don't want to include cumulative upkeep. I think it's okay for curators to like say there's a mechanic that they don't like and they don't want to support and they don't include cards for it, right? That's exactly why I didn't include Cylinder from the cycle because I didn't want to support Hexproof. So while Blizzard is a on theme win, it can lose on the mechanics. And it's rare, but it happens. But you can find the card that's both on theme and is supporting the archetype that you want to support. And then of course, it's an auto include.
I think it's time that we introduce the audience to the Dragons of Winter's Night. I have them all detailed up and they'll be in the show notes. As you may expect, dragons, some of them can get a little lengthy, especially most of the modern dragons, right? We're no longer Shivan Dragon has fire breathing. We're way past that now.
Yeah.
So it's
still a great card.
We will, by choice, choose to read some of these. So we'll do some touch points, right? So Chill, would you mind introducing a couple of these dragons? I've got all the dragons, and I would like for the audience to know the dragons because they're very important. They're the benchmarks, the pillars of this design. But for the essence of time and the boredom of the listeners, I don't think we could read all of Icing Death, Frost Tyrant. I mean, it's a novel.
Well, May already mentioned that, right? That was the one that May highlighted.
So we've covered that one.
So you have the full cycle, like I said. So we have the full cycle of the Battle for Baldur's Gate mythic. So that's the ancient Elder Dragon cycle, right? You got ancient gold dragon, which is the white one, silver, which is the blue one, brass, which is the black one, copper, which is the red one, which you said you liked, and then bronze, which is the green one. All right, and those are all kind of similar. They do different things, but at the end, the long and short of it is they're awesome epic dragons that you roll a d20 with when you connect, and that d20 does something good for you. So it's the each is bonus, right? And that kind of variance, like if I roll a d20, listen, rolling a d20 and getting extra benefit, you probably don't need it, right? You just connected with a gigantic dragon, but it's fun, right? And I think having fun is important to having keep. So I have that set cycle. And then like I have the mythic cycle from Adventures in Forgotten Realms. Those all have a little bit different names. You get right. We got Imrith, Desert Doom, blue. We got Even Death, Dracolich in black. We have, let's see where to go. Old Gnawbone, like you mentioned there, in green.
Awesome.
And then Icing Death, as previously mentioned. It looks like you're missing one. It looks like you're missing Inferno of the Star Mounts. So Inferno of the Star Mounts is the red one. So that's four red for a 6/6. Yeah.
So I failed. I built the show notes. My secretary called in sick and, Stu. And yeah.
Yeah, you get what you get with that one. So
I'm actually going to change. I want to change one. I want to change my choice. And it's going to be Dragon Lord Silumgar. All right. I'm actually going to change my favorite. And the reason why, number one, it's in Dimir, which I love. Great color combination.
Heck yeah.
I love the Death Touch. I don't know. I don't know if I could have the time right now to go through and look at all the Death Touch or how represented Death Touch is, but I like it. It's a strong mechanic. And I like the fact that you get to gain control of a target creature for as long as you control Dragon Lord Silumgar. The reason why I like this, especially in the context of this cube, and May, I think you made a beautiful summary of why you liked your dragon there, Icing Death, Frost Tyrant, but it's bleakness. And maybe that's just something that you can put for all the dragons, but something like that comes down and it connects. It's like, man, I have to give up a dragon or I have to give up. I don't know. Do you even have any planeswalkers in this cube? I don't think there's any.
There's no
planeswalkers, right? So it's just getting control of a creature, but that's a bit of a feels bad. And that kind of contributes to a bit of the bleakness that I kind of feel, which fits so nicely for me into the ice and the just, oh man, I'm freezing cold and I've got these dragons flying over and they're either burning the heck out of me or they're creating artifacts or something like that. So. I dig that dragon.
And I'm actually going to change mine too. Mine was just a sneaky, cheeky way of me plugging a previous episode. The old Gnawbones method, check it out.
Yes, exactly.
But it's actually my favorite, truthfully, besides the old Gnawbones method, which is really great, check it out, is Limrith, the Desert Doom. For three colorless and two islands, get a legendary creature, dragon, flying. Limrith, the Desert Doom, has Ward 4 as long as is untapped. Whenever Limrith deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. Then if you have fewer than three cards in hand, draw cards equal to the difference. It is a 5/5. Not only do I just love this card and the ability to, it only becomes vulnerable on attack, right? But it's a female and it's in my La Femme Fatale cube because of that reason.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it actually made the quality. So
another quintessential dragon art as well.
It is sick. So cool this dragon is like, so there's some of these dragons, like if you had your Polaroid out and they flew over, you would pull it out. And then there's some of these that you're running for a cave. That's one of them. This is horrific. This is, that is some sick art. It will be in the show notes.
I was going to say exactly that. Like, check out the show notes if you're not familiar with all the dragons and the cycles that Jonathan has got in this cube. They're worth it just to go through and look at how incredible the dragon art has been over the last few years in Magic. They are really wonderful.
Yeah. And in addition to, we will have a link to his cube, which will hopefully, let's go ahead and do a plug too, because he has put this in for a featured cube at KubeCon, right?
KubeCon.
And this is one of my favorites. You know, it may close your ears, but I want to vote for this cube. I will vote for the fake cube too. I swear.
Of course.
I swear my oath of that. But this is the one that I am really, really excited to draft. So I'm looking forward to this. So whenever this goes up for KubeCon votes, you guys give this some love because I would love to see this as a featured cube.
And if you like the cubes.
And the fake cube. Yes.
Yeah. And if you like the cubes that you're voting for KubeCon, then that means you've got to get yourselves out to KubeCon.
Yes.
And come play this cube. Like, you know, what excuse can you possibly have if you've voted for one of these wonderful cubes? Get out to Wisconsin, October 2023.
And this, during this intermission here that I've chosen to abruptly take, not only will this amazing The Dragons of Winter's Night and the Fae Cube, and then my Uber Bears Horror Cube, Uber Bears Artifact Cube, and Samich's Peasant Cube they're all going up for contention here. So whenever the votes go up, we would truly appreciate if the listeners could back, I know, 5 cubes, right? That would be amazing. But this is what we're looking for. But yeah, check us out at KubeCon 2023, Madison, Wisconsin, from October the 19th to the 22nd. It is going to be exciting, and all of us will be there. Carry on, Chill. What else you got to offer about this cube? What do we got going on here?
Yeah, so thanks for letting me flex a little creative muscles a little bit, giving me this platform. I do super appreciate it. I'll add, so I think even small decisions with how cubes are made can make a big difference. So one of the things I did as well, because I wanted the lands to feel special. So like, all right, let me, I'm bad at stories, right? But let me back up. So let me finish the strand I was on here though. So every non-standard land, so like non-basic, so the snow basics got it. But every non-basic land is foil to hopefully help it stand out a little bit in the draft. Be like, ooh, what's this? So this is my second cube. My first cube is what we'll call a power maximized cube. And I love that cube. It's great, but it doesn't drive as much kind of like creative fire within me as like this cube does. One of the reasons for that, and this has been touched on before with some cube articles that have been posted, when you build a power maximized cube, you're so limited in the cards that you can include that work in that environment. And that's fun. It's fun to do. But then, you know, after a while, it's almost like a cube curator level up. You're like, I want to build something like different. Like I want to have some choice here. I want to have some artistic freedom. And you can't, it's very difficult to do it in a power maximized environment. And so this cube has allowed me to do that. It's a lot lower power in terms of like the removal, right? Like I'm running a card Exile, which one I think is just perfect on flavor, which so it's just like solitary like castle out in a snowfield. But it's kind of conditional removal at 3 mana, which is kind of where I've set the bar for removal. There are a couple of pieces of removal that are a little bit better. I am running Murder, but I wanted that to stand out as a very wild murder. This is something I should look at. And red's got a little bit more burn in it. But when you don't run at the peaks of power, you find so many, much more space, and you can be very selective in the cards that you include. So that was definitely a cube level up for me, building this cube, and something that, you know, for other cube curators or cube curators to be out there, don't feel like you have to run the best of everything. You actually get a lot more choice and freedom and creativity as a cube curator if you bring the power level down just a little bit. But bringing power level down doesn't mean you're bringing fun down. Like I've played this a couple of times. Other people have given, like, I think there's a lot of fun things in this cube, and just, you don't have to be turn one, you know, like Sol Ring Mox to have fun. You can have a lot of fun building the deck, having a desert style cube where you have to draft your lands and you're in pack three and you're a few lands short. When that on color land wheels around, you're like, oh yes, like fun. Like I got it.
Yes.
Like, and then that you can bring your deck together and you get a functioning 40. And it's something that you created, right? That is not a linear archetype and maybe has some cool things in it, some dragons or so cool interaction that you're like, I'm going to show my opponent this like A, B, C combo that I built. And it's going to be fantastic.
Yep.
And you go and you play with 7 other buddies and you have a good time doing it. So that really, you know, having that kind of level up for me has been very, very eye opening and, you know, brought to bear. And that only happened because of going to KubeCon and some of the resources that we have, you know, here in the Cube community. Like going to KubeCon showed me how many other different types of cubes there are other than just a power maximized cube. Themed cubes and lower power cubes or cubes with custom rules or something can really, really drive cubing to the next level. And so that's why I'm just so super excited to come to KubeCon 2023. Jaybro said, I think it's going to be like double in size in terms of what they're trying to do in terms of number of cubes and number of players. And I'm just very excited to, one, see all y'all again.
Right.
In person for the first time will be great.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi. and then get up there and freaking just like cube from dawn till dusk and then after dusk, right? And pass out from cubing for a full 4 days.
And I like the comment that you made about sort of for me, and I will say the last 48 hours for me, I have spent a lot of time on cube design with the cube that I'm putting together. And it's a mentality that I had to get myself into is here is my low end, which is fairly straightforward to sort of keep my brain in. And then here is my top end. This is kind of where I want to be at when it comes to, you know, power and toughness versus CMC for a creature and the kind of abilities that they want them to be at. And I feel like I've had to sort of maintain that. I have not been able to watch any YouTube videos, no legacy content, no vintage cube content, no none of that kind of stuff, which I'm normally a junkie for, but I don't want to kind of get poisoned, if you will, in that, you know, oh, that card's super cool, but no, but it's far too powerful for the cube that I'm trying to put together, right? So I'm definitely trying to, I've got a highway. I'm not, you know, I might be able to move lanes a little bit, but if I start like looking for exits and those power outliers that I know are just going to absolutely ruin things, this is why I've had to be so focused. So I can imagine like, or can you, was that kind of similar to the approach that you took when you were designing it, that you were like so focused on those lanes and where you kind of needed to keep that power level?
I think it all started with like, what was this story? Like, what did I want the feelings of the player to feel while they were drafting this cube? In terms of
Bleak,
God bless Scryfall and the power.
Yeah.
I have a friend, he's building a cube as well, and he told me he was using Gatherer, and I about died. Like, I was like, man, you cannot be using Gatherer to build a cube. Like,
I mean, you can, but yeah, you're going to get a nosebleed.
If you hate yourself. Yeah. So in terms of the left and right bounds, like, you have touched on this before. You can use the maybe board. You can test things out. And you can get feedback on the play of the cube, how it's going. Use all those tools at your disposal. You know, if you had a card in that's a little too powerful, like whatever. Like people will draft you like this card's a little too powerful.
I've already kind of got that point as well, that I know that there's a couple of cards, even though I'm maybe a quarter to 30% through like putting the cards in there. I know already there's a couple of outliers, and I agree 100%. It's nice to have those tools to be able to say, like, look, I know that's a bit of an outlier. I'm probably going to have to shift that down into the maybe, but probably not. But you never know. Like, the whole power level of the entire cube might shift up a little bit, and it might work out that that's a card that can function maybe at the top level of the power.
Which leads me to my next segue, the suggestion for the Dragons of the Winter's Night. The card Dragon Breath. For one colorless and a mountain, you get an enchant creature. Enchant creature has haste, and it basically gives it fire breathing. When a creature with converted mana cost 6 or more comes into play, you may return Dragon's Breath from your graveyard to play, enchanting that creature.
That's strong.
Dragon's Breath. It gives it haste, yes, man.
This is a cycle. This is a cycle from Scourge.
Yes.
I have looked at this cycle. I tried to, even though there's an enchantress theme, I'm decided to lean more towards equipment for getting the creatures to go versus enchant. I've looked at this whole cycle. I think that's an excellent input.
Yeah, I'm just going to do these random curveballs. This is let you see how this feels.
So far, I got plate armor going into the maybe board. Yeah. That's
what's going on there. We kind of touched upon the dragons. I'm going to recap on the ones that are in here. So we've got Ice Death, Frost Titan. We got Ancient Gold Dragon, Limrith. We talked about that. The Ancient Silver Dragon, the Ebon Death Dragon Lich. Now, I want to talk about this because this is not only your zombie faction, but this also is included in your dragon faction. This card is so good.
A sick card. And I will say, I'll talk about this a little bit later on, but I drafted a Dimir, what's definitely more on the black side of things, but I drafted a deck. I saw this. It was so on point for the kind of deck that I wanted to draft. I had zombies in there. I had sacrifice in there. And this card is just such a pull together, right? It's not super powerful. Tell us about these kind of choices and how, like, does this represent a top end for the zombies? And as far, like, it's a dragon, so it's super flavorful for the cube. But tell us about, like, how this ties in with the zombie faction.
Okay, yeah, that's a great point. So I'll say, so while the dragons do represent some top end, I'm not actually confident that, so even though the dragons do represent top end, I'm not 100% certain that the dragons are the best things to be doing the cube. Are they cool? Yes. Do you want to land them and turn them sideways? Yes. Will you feel good about doing that? Yes. Will you win? Probably. But are there other things in the cube that you could be doing? I think there are. And this is where, you know, I'm hoping players can do some of that adventurous, right, like, discovery of this, like, new world and, like, what, how can I survive and what can I find out here? So you brought up zombie faction and in black. One of the other great inspirations for this cube was some of the archetypes. And so I initially pulled a lot of cards over from Caleb Gannon's Powered Synergy cube.
Awesome cube.
Caleb Gannon's got a lot of, and I've mentioned Caleb Gannon in my archetypes video on YouTube. And so I take my own advice and I went and looked at to see like what are some of the archetypes that he had included in his Powered Synergy cube. And I like some of them. So Sacrifice being one of those, which pairs very well with zombies. So, you know, when you need a card to sacrifice, a sacrifice enabler, like an outlet, and then a reason to be sacrificing something that you get by doing it, right? So in this cube, Gravecrawler is the card you want to be sacrificing because you can replay it from the graveyard, right? So you're looking at almost infinite sacrifice effects if you can get there. Another great enabler of sacrifice, I have Greater Gargadon in here, which people, like, to me, I wish he was, like, coming out of, like, well, so it looks like a woolly mammoth, so that's kind of on flavor, right? But Greater Gargadon is actually the world's most secret best sacrifice outlet ever because you can sacrifice anything, creatures, lands, artifacts, anything, right? And every time you sacrifice one of those, you're going to get a sacrifice trigger. So you could sacrifice your Gravecrawler 10 times to Greater Gargadon, and now you're getting a Greater Gargadon with haste on the battlefield. And then if you pair that with something like Mayhem Devil, one of the kind of premium Rakdos sacrifice like payoffs, you're dealing a damage every time you sacrifice, right? So I just did 10 to the face through, you can do infinite, right? So you don't, as long as you have a zombie, but So to steer to your question, yeah, I'm not actually sure zombies are cool, and I'm glad you want to draft it, and I would as well, but I'm hoping players can find some of those, honestly, some combo synergy in here. And that was another tool I used, right? I used the Commander Spellbook. I have another video on that about combo and cube to see like what combos are in here, and also to see like what combos I was close to if I added one more card to add to there, just to give players something to do that is powerful and kind of like, ooh, I made it happen. And like, I got these pieces together to do it. Now the zombie sacrifice archetype, I actually had to tone it down their last draft. So I took what did I take out here? I took out Judith, the Scourge Diva.
Okay.
Just to tone it down a little bit, right? I don't want to kill the archetype, but I was like, listen, I don't need Judith. But the history section now on Cube Go is pretty cool to go see exactly, you know, May 5th, I took out Judith, the Scourge Diva.
So I have one.
I'll answer your questions too.
You found some synergies, and I've seen them. I noticed you have KCI combo in here, too. And from a thematic standpoint, what was your headspace for the KCI combo in a winter? I want to know where your tie-in is.
So help me out. So I'm aware of Cart Clan Ironworks, KCI. What is there a specific combo that you're identifying or for the listeners?
Yeah, you had Junk Diver. You had Metal. What's its face? And yeah, you had the loop. But I didn't know what your payoff was, except for Banefire, if I had some red mana.
Yeah, that is one payoff. So that's, I think, one place I'm trying to... I have the fear that the archetype, that like the sacrifice artifact archetype doesn't have enough payoffs. Like, why do I... Like, I have the loop, and what do I do with it?
Yeah.
So Banefire is one, right, where you can generate tons of mana, maybe not infinite or an infinite, tons of mana, and I just Banefire you for 20. That would be pretty cool. So that's why Banefire is in the cube, is to give someone something to do with that mana. In terms of KCI itself, like, is it a flavor win? Like, no, it's pretty off flavor. That was one of the choices that I made. I was like, listen, this is off flavor, but it does a very unique effect for artifacts that I want to include, and it can enable some of those synergies. So, no, I think you identified, I want to find a good payoff for artifact sacrifice. Justin, another player who was at KubeCon, he's got the altered cube. I think it's called All the Yellow Foods is what he calls his cube.
Yeah, it is.
He did a draft. So Justin put this together, and his payoff is Dance of the Mance.
Nice. So yeah, that's a win.
Yeah, yeah, so that's another one, right? But this is the best. And so this was a Cube Cobra draft. So with bots, but you can see he's got ways to sacrifice artifacts, ways to recur artifacts, a bunch of great artifacts in here. I love that he's included Teshar as well. He's got Fate's Reward and Savine's Reclamation. So all ways to kind of recur things from your graveyard. And then whether that's just through pure value, like Dragon Spark Reactor could be another way he does it, which I loved it when I found this card. So Dragon Spark Reactor is one in a red. It's from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. It's an artifact. It says whenever Dragon Spark Reactor or another artifact enters the battlefield, put a charge counter on it, right? And then for four and sacrifice, you get to dome something, right? So target player, let's see, what it deals damage to charge counter to target player and that much damage to one target creature, right? So with this loop, you could probably do a bunch of damage there. Is this as good as Banefire? I don't know.
But it's you also have Hurricane, too, if you're not at parity. Or you can do like I did the other night where I was going to die to Stew in my Jun cube, the Munson cube. He's going to kill me. He just did the Lich, whatever, Liliana Vess's brother. And he dropped all the zombies, turned sideways, got death on the board. I got nothing else going on. I cast Hurricane, kill us both, draw, pass. May has questions.
No, I actually wanted to throw a curveball for what you could do. You could throw in Galazeth Prismari for your Izzets, because I feel like Galazeth Prismari would add that kind of curve that we're looking for a kind of really heavy spell slinger. And when mana is so heavily in parity, having a way to really utilize those treasures in a different way could be a really unique option.
Yeah, no, that's a great input. Yeah. I think there's a kind of a treasure sub theme coming out in red as well. It's an artifact, but it's also some treasure stuff. Galazeth Prismari could fit real well. Yeah, I really appreciate that. One card I'm looking at here is Reign of Riches. It's from Mom Commander set. It's kind of cool. First of all, there's like golden dragon statue, like in an underground lair surrounded by like treasure in its hoard, and it seems kind of like frozen in time. So that's the picture of it. Super cool. It's Reign of Riches. It's three red for an enchantment, and when it enters the battlefield, you make two treasure tokens. So it's like, okay, I paid 5 mana to make 2 treasure tokens. Like, what else does this 5 mana enchantment do? And it says the first spell you cast each turn that mana from a treasure was spent on has Cascade. I don't know if it's gonna make it, but Cascade is a heck of a fun, you know, what do I want to do with those treasures? Cascade can be fun. We'll see.
I feel like in your environment, treasures are particularly strong just because of how in demand those land resources are.
It could be. Yeah. So, like I said, I don't want players failing, right? Like, nobody wants to fail in their draft. That's not fun. So, Anthony, Anthony, good, you had strong. You had asked about, like, what percentage of lands. And so, like, I think a good number, like, when I do the math, it basically turns out for 8 drafters, there's 19.125 lands. So, like, just over 19 lands per drafter. So, now, not all of those are colored land sources, but some are multiple colored. Like, I am running City of Grass, which I do think is a legit pick one, pack one in this environment.
Agreed.
I wish I had, like, City of, like Snow City of Grass, but, like, I don't. But so, yeah, so there's a little over 19 lands per drafter. So, like, as long as everyone is, you know, and if you're drafting a desert cube, I think this is probably good for most desert cubes. I don't know. I don't have a lot of empirical data. You should be drafting, like, 5 to 6 lands per pack. Like, if you're not drafting 5 to 6 lands per pack, you're going to end up in pack 3 being, like, 10 lands, needing 10 lands, and you may not be able to get there.
So I will say that tracks.
But I felt it was important that drafters – It's possible for all drafters to succeed, okay? There's 19, a little over 19 lands per drafter. So all drafters can succeed, but you do have to be careful, right? There is a little bit of tension there, which I think adds a little fun to the draft and a little, you know, a little like, oh no, like, am I going to get there? Am I not going to get there? But it's possible for them all to get there. So if you're looking to build a desert cube, that's my only like 2 cents on that.
Another thing, too, is I was talking to the players kind of nervously leading off to my Monopoly Cube launch, which is a miniature clone of yours and a clone of the previous Desert Cube that we discussed. And I was kind of telling them, when you're looking at the lands, don't look at the Orzhov color group. Look at is I need white. I'm going to take this Orzhov land, even though it enters the battlefield tap, because this is necessary to complete my white mana cycle in this particular environment, whatever I need. So it's just a way of retraining yourself when you're doing the pass arounds. You're not looking at the dual nature of the color suites, but you're looking for, I need an island, and this is going to have to be my island.
I will say, I agree with that 100%. On the last draft that I did, I had two lands that were, I could have played, that would have been maybe off color unless I splashed. Maybe post sideboarding, but they lands that tap for a color that I need. And I'm not too worried about you know, whether or not they're going to come intact, as long as, like I said, I generally tend to benchmark around 17 per draft. So, yeah, that tracks exactly.
So let's bring it back home to the dragon. So we've got a final three on this list that I have. Would you mind talking about Chill? It's starting with Kolaghan and talking about this suite of dragons, because I really want people to appreciate your choices of dragons in this cube.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot. So I got the I've drafted this cube twice in paper. I got the feedback, hey, Jonathan, you need to add more dragons to your dragon. And I was like, got it, noted, thank you. I will take that feedback and I will add more dragons. So I was, what dragons am I going to add? What is going to be comparable to the mythics, the elder dragons from AFR and Battle for Baldur's Gate? So I was looking through some of the dragons. I stumbled on the Fate Reforged cycle, right? And so this is a rare cycle of dragons. We already talked about Simlungar, not including that because I hexproof. So I felt these dragons fit in the power level. They did something cool, and I felt that they could be included. So, you know, they're a little bit less expensive than the Elder Dragons, but they're also two colors, right? And so, you know, that's another kind of thing. If a drafter is going to pick something that's two colors, it better be something cool and something unique that they can't get in just the regular color, like a single color thing. So that's what I thought. That all, like Silumgur, the you brought up, Stu, the Dimir one, like that is the only steal your thing effect in the cube. And so to me, that's enough, right? To be like, listen, I'm not in blue, but I could splash for this Silumgur to steal the thing.
I will splash for that. Believe me, I will splash for that.
For Kolaghan, for Atarka, for Jamoka. Jamoka is probably the weakest as standard Celestia is. It just bolsters too, but okay. I added more dragons to the dragon cube. I felt these were a good power level. I am looking at adding some more right now up in the maybe board. I have Guardian Scale Lord from Mom. I think is it Mom Commander? I'm not sure. So this is the, I think backup is a super successful mechanic. So this is a 4 and a white for a 3/4 backup 1 flying. And then when you attack with a creature, you return a card with mana value X or less, where X is that the creature you're attacking with power, right? So if you back up your creature that you already have on the board, it now is flying, and it's going to get a recursion effect, which white has a recursion theme in it. And this is a dragon, and I can get a whole extended art because I like my dragons being extended art. So I think this one's probably going to make it as I've added a couple more dragons. I'm also looking at Gadrick, this Crown Scourge. So Gadrick, the Crown Scourge, another legendary dragon for 2 and a red. You get a 5/4 flyer. What's cool is you're like, wait, 3 mana, 5/4 flyer. And you can't attack unless you have 4 or more artifacts in play. So if you're making treasures, if you have the artifacts, you're playing the Mishra's Bauble, which I have in here, you like 0 mana stuff. You could enable this, and that seems kind of cool. So yeah, those are a couple other dragons I'm looking at.
Jamoka, Jamoka was an interesting one for me. And I think it's, so you said that you added this one kind of after the fact. Is that correct?
So the Forged Dragons were added, yeah, based off of feedback from drafters saying add more dragons to your dragons.
Okay, and I mentioned that one because we've talked a lot about signposts that you may look for as a drafter when you, you know, so I'm looking for what are the potential big payoffs or the big signposts. So I look at something like Jamoka, and it's got the bolster effect. And maybe I might look, hey, is there a +1/+1 counter sub theme somewhere in the cube? But obviously there isn't in this one. So this is purely that it's a card that's just added because it's a dragon and dragons are the main theme of the cube.
I think you're right in identifying that this one is, I would agree, is probably the weakest add. And if a Celestia dragon comes out that fits better, I think this is an excellent replacement.
I mean, it's only 5 mana, though, for a 5/5 flying. So, you know.
So, I'm of the opinion, to kind of counterpoint against the individuals telling you to add more dragons, I think, and I'm going to ask May's opinion on this. I'll give mine first, and then I'll see how May thinks about it. From a flavor design standpoint, so I don't picture this as a world where I'm looking up and I'm just seeing dragons like seagulls, right? I mean, they're short in supply, and these are the lords. They're strong. So I think these are chosen for a very particular reason because, I mean, look at Atarka, the world render. I mean, it's flying trample. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, it gains double strike. It's not there to play around. Aren't like Shivan dragons, you know, we love Shivan dragon, but it's not just any old dragon. So I think overly saturation will start creating too many low dips and kind of devaluing the power level. Even though you're saying that you don't intend by design for this to be the top end of your drafters, or at least, you know, that's their choice to do so.
It very well could be.
It could be, but by overly saturating the environment with dragons, you potentially devalue the thematic. Like, these are supposed to be special when you come across them, right? They're a big deal.
Exactly. Yeah, if everyone's special, then no one's special kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And that's just...
I will also add that when it comes to not only the flavor aspect, but also the mechanical aspect of when you're trying to design the cubes, that way you have these very special dragons that are bomby, splashy. Everything that they do is unique to that dragon. They stand out in a pack. They have to be good enough or interesting enough that people want to draft it over just getting a land. And adding more dragons, like you said, adds too much saturation and takes away from it. But the mechanical part of that is that the more flyers and the more dragons that you have, the less good flying becomes. That's the exact problem that I had with my Dragon Time Cube, which is why I got inspired by your list this morning, where I was just going through my Dragon Time list for like the fifth time already, being like, oh, I don't have to fill the entire cube with dragons just because I want it to be a dragon cube. Just make the dragons that I'm putting in relevant. Make them matter. The more that they stand out as the big bomb splashy cards of the pack or the big mechanical standouts, the more interesting that they're going to be to draft and prioritize.
For Wizards of the Coast, right? Like, they do that with their... I mean, you can agree with it if you're not, but if you listen to Morrow, they have their booster fund, right? Like, what is... There's a reason. So every card in this cube is just the basic frame. Basic card, no foil, no splashy. But the dragons are extended. Like, that's super cool. And then the non-basic lands are foil. So, like, to your point exactly, that dragon's going to stand out. You're going to be like, oh, sweet. I opened Icing Death. Like, sweet. Like, I want to draft this sweet white deck where I'm going to get some equipment and hit you in face with Icing Death. And if he dies, great. I get more equipment to now tap your stuff. So, no, that's an excellent point. That's 100% spot on.
So this is my third and final curveball of suggestions, and I wanted your thought on this one. I want to suggest Crashing Drawbridge. For two colorless, you get a 0/4 Defender Artifact Creature Wall. Tap, creatures you control gain haste until the end of turn. It would act as a defender for the ground forces while I'm trying to build up to my Dromoka the Eternal.
You just want this because it's a wall.
I do.
And because of the wall.
And dragons? Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Let's be honest.
I would actually put Ice Wall in there, too. There's a couple of walls. I'm serious. There's that big
wall,
blue...
Wall of Ice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Seven. Yeah, dude. The wall of Ice. Wall of Ice. Yes. Do it.
Wall of Stone, Wall of Ice. Yeah. Yeah. Right now, the things that give haste are in the red section of the color pot for this cube. So I don't know if I necessarily want to have walls in the cube to slow things down. I think so one of White's sub themes is like Mentor of the Meek. It has some smaller things that I can recur. And if a colorless artifact, which any drafter would have access to, could kind of stonewall that, I'm not sure that would play perfectly well with some of the balance that I was trying to have among those. You know, I want archetypes to be viable. Of course, let me rephrase. You want, as a curator, you want no traps, right? You want every archetype that you include to be functional and be able to win. Now, obviously, I think some archetypes are better than others. Like I said, I had to tone down the sacrifice theme a little bit. I thought it was a little too good. That also being said, like, I want to see someone win with a Lurrus Mentor of the Meek style white deck. I want to see someone win with, like we just brought up with Justin, with his artifact sacrifice into Dance of the Mance off of KCI or Banefire or something like that. So I want to see some of maybe those, what I would find unique and interesting archetypes, you want to support them a little bit.
Yeah, I was also looking. I was looking at some of the sacrifice. So the deck that I drafted earlier that I was talking about, when I'm looking at some of those sacrifice, I'm not always looking at if I'm able to sacrifice creatures with like Ashnod's Altar for it as an example. Yes, it can work wonderfully in some kind of combo environment where you're looking to put some kind of loot together. But sometimes, you know what? I can just sack like three creatures, make six mana, tap two lands, and put a huge 8-drop on the battlefield, 6-drop, 7-drop, whatever the case may be. It doesn't have to be some loopy combo, right? Sometimes it's just, I want to generate a ton of mana. I want to make a big play. Like, I'm excited to put this huge flying 8-8 dragon onto the battlefield, right?
Give me my Timmy moment.
Exactly. And get excited. Exactly. 100%.
Let
me black fly. Give me my big creature dirty to just turn sideways and start slapping.
I want to talk about like one of the decks. So there will be included in the show notes that we've kind of built, and I'll have others. I'll compile them. But I was able to pull off this sick Lurrus deck. I was able to pack one, pick one Lurrus, and that is, you know, where I want to start, right? And I went with things like Dragon Hunter. And let's talk about Dragon Hunter. Like, how in demand is Dragon Hunter in this particular environment? I mean, what are we looking at? That was the whole buildup. Dragon Hunter. Tell us about it, Chill. And
you want to talk about Dragon Hunter.
How high of a pick is Dragon Hunter?
It's pretty good, right? Because it's got protection from dragons. Dragon Hunter, right? So it's white for a 2/1 human warrior. Warriors is also a supported faction, at least in red. So I'm trying to bleed it over. It has the keywords here, not keyword, but protection from dragons. Dragon Hunter can block dragons as though it had reach. So it is the dragon brick wall for sure. So how in demand is it? I mean, it's a one toughness creature that dies to anything but a dragon. So is it cool? Is it good? Like, yeah, like if I land my Icing Death and you play a Dragon Hunter, I'm like, oh man, I hope I drafted removal.
I actually don't think that it's as good in this environment as it is in the Fae Cube. And the Fae Cube has less dragons.
Yeah.
Okay.
But because there's so many more changelings, it's more relevant in the Fae Cube.
But you can see
so
where...
I think in this specific environment, it tricks you a little bit.
If I had Lurrus out, I could loop Dragon Hunter.
Dragon's Cube. Oh, wait. This is just the Savannah Lions, except when they have a dragon out.
So I played... And again, one of the times I played in a paper, I played against my friend Mike. And Mike drafted a totally reasonable deck, but he forgot to draft removal. And so, this would be one of those cards where it's like self-critiquing. It's like, listen, you know, drafter, there are some things that like you need to know to do. And that is you do need to have some way to deal with problematic creatures, problematic enchantments, artifacts, something like that, right? And so looking for those cards to draft, you can't just go in, you know, all in on one creatures only and have no interaction. That's not going to work. You know, I do want to reward drafters for drafting good, reasonable decks. I've tried to include cards that can interact with usually permanents that are harder to interact with. So interacting with creatures is usually pretty easy, but interacting with enchantments and artifacts, that was some early feedback that there was not enough enchantment and artifact interaction. It's like, so I've tried to include cards that hopefully don't get sideboarded, that there's reasons to play that are not, so you don't just sideboard it, that also interact with those problematic enchantments and artifacts. You know, when you're building a cube, look for those kind of things. Like, that would be kind of some of those Swiss Army knife or some glue to kind of help some of the archetypes.
So any final thoughts, and besides the fact that we've told our listeners to, whenever it comes up for CubeCon vote, we would really appreciate if people could give some love to this cube because absolutely gorgeous and we're in love with it. Any final thoughts made you have on this environment? Any things that you would suggest or standouts or big ideas that you have right now?
I'm a big fan of this environment. I actually took a different approach compared to what you both did, where I figured that you were going to be like making deaths and drafting. I decided to take the top-down approach of, if I were to take this list and theorycraft some decks, what would I build? And I theorycrafted some Gruul Treasure deck. It was like white, blackish equipment deck. It was like a splash black for just that Icing Death deck that I was mentioning before, where it's just, I'm just trying to clear the board and smack your face.
All right, Stu, any final thoughts you have on this cube or any?
I will say, I love the way that it drafted. I did a few mock drafts, and I want to go back to this from an emotional... I had an emotional reaction to this, which I tend to look for when I'm drafting a cube, and it did feel kind of bleak. Like, the choices... They felt like I really did have to think very hard. And maybe this was because it was a desert cube and I'm always looking for the premium lands. I'm looking for fetch lands. I'm looking for lands that tap for two colors. Obviously, there's no OG dual lands or shark lands or anything like that in there. So the choices for the mana fixing was a little more straightforward to me, but it always felt like such a turmoil when I was looking at the cards, like, you know, because I didn't feel like it was difficult to draft, which I loved about it. I felt like I was always able to find a few cards that I wanted to draft that fit with what I drafted previously, but it still just felt very bleak and very difficult and very like, I just wanted to go into the corner and have a little cry by myself for a few minutes before I took the next card. So, that's just the kind of person that I am, but I loved it. I loved the choices. I loved the decision making. I love what it made me feel when I was drafting it. The card choices, everything felt very meaningful, very deliberate, very purposeful. Like, I didn't feel like there was any filler in there. Everything felt like it was on theme. And I know we've mentioned this previous or before in this episode. I really, really cannot wait. Even if it's not chosen at KubeCon, which will be a travesty.
Which it will be.
Because it will be. But
I'm bringing it.
Bring it. When we're hanging out in that hotel room, we're going to be drafting this bad boy for sure.
Yeah. So I'm going to give mine before I turn it over to Jonathan here. So for me, it was not only the cube pulled me in from the get, right? Whenever I just started looking at the cards and his art selections without even doing it, understanding how a desert cube worked, if I'm being honest, I started humming the Song of Fire and Ice. I started literally just tapping my feet. I wasn't kidding. I was just like, whoa, this is really having an emotional impact on me just from his artistic choices and what he's trying to. And I hadn't even at that point, I'm just perusing through the list, right? That says a lot about the storytelling. It's like I'm just kind of flipping through the library and I'm looking at book covers and they're giving me emotional feedback, right? And that's very impressive. And then as we talked about in the beginning, I guess your, what is it, TLDR or who cares, your executive summary, your front page. It's really beautiful. Like, the layout of it is exciting. I absolutely love that. It pulls the reader in. Everything about this cube's just enthralls me, right? And I'm excited to draft this. And for me personally, it was very difficult to understand how to do pick choices where, as you said, I may have to take a planes over a bomb. That is really weird. But I have to have a basically categorically memorize which choices I've made as I've progressed through the draft. Time out. We got to scream real quick. He's going to yell goal. Do it. Do it.
I can't. No, my kids are asleep. I can't.
Stu's watching hockey while we're recording.
No, I didn't want to interrupt your thoughts. You're making such a great point.
It's okay. People can appreciate that. I mean, he's really excited. He's emoting over here. But turmoil as you're drafting is interesting. It really makes you. It's an advanced way of drafting. I don't know what words to choose for it. It's so much so that after drafting yours, it really inspired me to turn my Monopoly that I was really kind of like with May when she was talking about her dragon design prior and she was kind of locked up on the idea, you know, dragons hitting dragons in the air. For me, it was like, I want to build Monopoly and I want to represent the idea of Monopoly, but people are going to get really bored if I have them just doing I was trying to find sub games and all this stuff. And I looked at yours and like, holy crap, let's just make a desert version of Monopoly, like make it so that you have to earn an economy. So, yeah, I mean, you've inspired that idea. So
pretty exemplary, I will say, as far as, you know, we've talked about a whole bunch of cubes on our podcast. And, you know, we've drafted a whole bunch of cubes at KubeCon and in our group. And I will say that this, for me, this is just a really incredible design, the play style and the emotional response that it brings when you're looking at the card choices is, I think, exemplary is not a superlative that is too much for this cube. I really think it's just incredible.
Jonathan, anything else you want the listeners to know about this cube and what you're trying to do from design aspect?
Well, I just want to say thank you so much. Those were some very kind words.
Deserved.
I super appreciate that. I actually wanted to just start out with is just a big thank you to you, Anthony, Stu, and May. Putting out a great podcast every week is no small task. And, you know, for anyone who enjoys listening to your show, there's a lot of work, but there's a lot of passion that goes into this. And so from everyone else in the Cube community, thank you so much for what you are doing to enrich that community. So I think that's important to recognize. I will plug KubeCon. So if you're not going, go to mtgkubecon.com and you can see all the information. There's a Discord you can join. If you have questions, it's a really welcoming community. Pop in there to the mtgkubecon Discord. Again, it's linked on their website. And come say hi, ask some questions, and hopefully we can get some more players out at KubeCon this year in Madison. So last, yeah, I'll just close with, I did make a trailer for this cube. I titled it on YouTube. You can Google it. It's Huge Nerd Makes a Trailer for Their MTG Cube.
All right, we got it. We'll put that on the Twitter.
So I will add that too. Yeah, that'll be on Twitter.
You gotta fly the nerd flag when you can, right? You just gotta own it. So I'm a millennial. I just gotta own it. So go check out my cube trailer. Check out some other content if you like talking, thinking about cube theory. You want to see some cube gameplay where I make a lot of punts. You go check out ChillMTG TV at YouTube there. So. Anyhow, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's always amazing. We look forward to we're going to do this again and again. This isn't the last time. Stu, would you mind taking us away, please?
Yeah. So, as I mentioned earlier, please go ahead and check out ChillMTG, Jonathan's YouTube channel, for some wonderful cube drafting content. I cannot speak highly enough. Like I mentioned previously, the punt meter is just the absolute pinnacle of content. It's incredible. As always, if you love the show, we would really appreciate it. Give us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Really helps us get out there and reach more out to the community and get in the ears of more and more people. Magic the Gathering players, we want more of you players to become cubers, cube curators, cube drafters. We love the format and really can't help but want to promote this format as much as possible. And it's amazing. It's the best way to play Magic, and we hope this either inspires you to watch some content on YouTube, or bring it up with your playgroup, or go ahead and design your own cube, as so many of us here have done or are doing. First thing, we have an affiliate with Altersleeves. You can go to www.altersleeves.com/ubercube. Check out their amazing products that they have on that site. You get 5% off if you use our link. If you want to support our show, you can also use our Inked Gaming affiliate link if you want to check them out. They have some wonderful playmats, dice bags, mouse pads, all that kind of stuff, all kinds of cool custom products. Bling out your cube, your EDH deck, whatever the case may be. Really awesome products that they have. Reach out to us on Twitter. We are at UbercubeMTGPod, right? We've had a ton of really awesome discussion. I feel like recently we've really ramped up the discussion when it comes to...
Oh,
it's been crazy. It's been wonderful.
So we're working on an episode, and it's pretty sweet because I put a Twitter feed out there, and we're like at 5,000 views, and the episode is writing itself through the community. It will be a fully community involved episode coming out soon from UberCube.
Yeah, please contact us on Twitter or follow us on Twitter. There's all kinds of wonderful conversation going on there. But if you want to just reach out to us in a 1v1, then reach out to us via email. We are UberCubeMTGPodcast@gmail.com. And if you check out our Twitter, you can also see the Discord that we have up for our community. We'd love to have you come along and join and hang out with us. It's good times. Anthony, why don't you tell us about the Patreon?
Bert and Ernie and I have. We have Mother's Day's luncheon tomorrow, so we're going to meet up and talk about what we're going to take our mothers out to do. It's going to be really great. All right. So now we're going to say the thing that we always say here at UberCube is Happy Cubing!